Why are we here? All right. The reason that we are here tonight is that I'd like to introduce our speaker for this evening is Jesse A. from Orchid.
Would Jesse an alcoholic? Hey guys. Right on. Cool. First off, I wanna thank the Don King of AA for asking me to speak. Appreciate that, man. It means a lot to me. Dad, I love you, man. I want to say welcome to the newcomers. I say this more for myself than for anyone else, but this is not about me tonight. It's about the newcomer. And hopefully by me being honest and sharing my story, some of you guys hear something that keeps you coming back, because that's what this is about. My ego doesn't want to tell me that, though. It's about me tonight. It's my first speaker meeting. I can't tell you how much I love how comfortable I feel in Alcoholics Anonymous and how this is my home, and I've never felt like that in my life until I found recovery in AA. And especially because it took me so long to get this, or at least for me, 6 years felt like a long time of consistently trying to do this. And for it not to work for me over and over again, not because the program doesn't work, but because I wasn't willing to do all that it takes, because it's a handful. And I'm just so grateful to be here and to actually be able to share my story like this. It's crazy. Like, what an honor. Because I for so long was so disrespectful about Alcoholics Anonymous and what it really was. I had no idea there was something special going on here in these rooms. When I was new, I just was such a punk about it. I just thought, man, these guys are losers. And that sucks that they have to do so much work just to stay sober. You know, I was like, and I'm over here with like 2 weeks saying that in my head, you know. I just want to say thank you to my beautiful wife and my kid. There he is. This is one of the gifts of recovery for me. He was born on July 4th, little Jackson right here. And don't clap, because he doesn't like it. So, I want to thank my good friend Johnny for driving here from San Francisco, because that's where I originally attempted. You're gonna start crying. That's where I originally attempted to get sober, and kind of pissed off because he has 5 years. That's what I would have had if I would have just got it. So, yeah, I'm coming up on, God willing, I'll have a year next month. 2 years, sorry. 2 years. Yeah. I'll have 2 years. October 15th, 2016 is my birthday, and I have two. I like to share this. I have two birthdays written on here. I have this one right here, and then 11/13/15, because that's the last time that I drank alcohol. It was 11/13/15, and I was coming up on my year, and took some painkillers. I know that it's considered an outside issue, but it's not if it changed my sobriety date. So it's what I did is I had to dig deeper and do this all over again. And I just want to say welcome to especially Colin for identifying as a newcomer. He doesn't want me to share his story, but what he did was brave, because he to identify as a newcomer after you've been attempting this and showing up and doing all the work, and then for it to still not work and for you to show up as a newcomer, that takes balls to do that. And I had to do that over and over again. And I had to do it this last time. And my recovery today is built on that integrity. To say, you're right, I'm not sober. You know, I did what I did. And to come back in, you know. And I'm grateful for that. Because if I would have just, you know, 3 painkillers, you don't feel much off of that. Like, the way I used to roll, like, that's nothing, you know? But for me to, like, come back in as a newcomer and to identify and start over was just huge for my recovery. So, anyways, enough of that. I'm going to dig into the story. Oh, yeah? So, For me, drinking began when I was when I was around 13. What I did was is as soon as I found out that what alcohol did, and that my parents had a lot of it in the house, I started stealing from them and pouring it in. My friends would come over, and it was like the mischievous thing to do. We'd like pour all the, we'd find the liquor cabinet, you know, we'd take them all out, and we'd mix and match and be like, oh, this tastes horrible. Well, they all taste horrible, but we would mix it all into a big cup, and then we'd swig it, and like, you know, and like, we'd be like, oh, this is awesome, and then we'd like do it again, you know, and have like another cup, and we just, the first time we did it, we just got hammered, and I thought to myself, this is how you do it. Like, yeah, like I found this. This is what I'm going to do. And so we're like every weekend, man. Like, so we would like be like total losers about this. But every weekend we'd go to a different parent's house so that we could take their, you know, booze and somehow get drunk when they would fall asleep or something, you know. And I did that for my middle teenage years. And, you know, and that's the kind of people I surrounded myself with. Those are my friends. We always did stuff like that. And then by the time we were in junior high, by the time I got to high school, I had been introduced to drugs, and I also got introduced to partying with house parties. And for me, I'll back up and say this, that I think, in my opinion, after working the steps and after looking at myself and hearing your guys' experience, I realize that I think I've always been an alcoholic. I think ever since I was a kid, man. Because I identify, you know, if you're new, and which really is pretty cool to talk about for me is that you can tell you're an alcoholic with an allergy of the body. That's obvious, right? Like how you drink is obvious you're an alcoholic. But for me, what's more important is when I'm not drinking, you can tell I'm an alcoholic. Because you take away drugs and you take away booze, I start like rotting on the inside, and there's something wrong with me, and I'm off, and it just starts eating at me slowly. And the next thing I know, it's like drinking sounds way better than doing this whole life thing that you guys are doing. It's just like, why, you know? And so when I was a kid, I even felt like that. Like I thought that's the way life felt, was just super uncomfortable. And so I was, you know, it's not the, I don't believe I'm an alcoholic because of something, something's happening to me. I believe I was just that to my core. But the things that happened to me was that I was bullied as a young kid, and I also was molested as a young kid. And so there was just a bunch of shit not going right on the inside, you know? And so when I started being able to drink or to drug, I loved it. And so from the get-go, it's been abnormal, my relationship with drinking and using. Because my friends liked it, you know, a little bit. They're like, this is cool. And I'm like, no, this is like it. Like this is like how I want to live, like, you know. And so sorry. keep coming back.
Bring him back when he gets sober.
Yeah, he just got the 30 days, you know. So, okay, so anyways, so for me, where was I? This is it, right? Thank you. For me, when I got introduced to to drugs, and you know, I just loved it so much, way too much. And so I'd get drunk every time, and if I didn't, I was really mad about it. And I would let everyone know about it. Like, you know, I was the kind of guy at the party where we'd, you know, because we're all underage, we're like 18, 19, and they'd go, yeah, that's it. You know, we're done. That's, you know, we're like down to our last, you know, we're down to our last, like 12 pack or whatever we had. And then I'd go, no, we're not. And it'd be like 1 or 2 in the morning. I'm like, no, we're not. What are we doing? Who's got money? What are we doing? I don't care. And if no one had money, I was going to steal it. And I did. And I was that guy. And they knew me. They knew me for that. Like, oh, Jussie will do it. Fucking Jussie's crazy. Ask Jussie, you know? And I'd be like, yeah, dude, yeah, let's go. I'd like walk into like Albertsons, and I've had to make amends for this, just so you know. And I would like, I'd just take my belt off, and then I would just like walk in, and I'd be already kind of hammered, and I would just like walk up, and I wouldn't even grab like a little bottle. I'd grab like a liter of something, you know, like a Jaeger or something, or like vodka, and I just like stuff it in my shirt like this, and I just would like walk out like this, and I thought like, some, they had to see me. There's no way, you know. It was like, and I just did that whenever I felt like I needed to, and I never got caught, you know, and thank God. But you know, that's just, I just trying to illustrate just how I behaved when I was in my 18, 19 years old. And it just got worse from there. I got my first DUI when I was 18. I got my second DUI when I was 20, 21, I think. So it was obvious to my family and to people around me that I was just a little out of control. And the second DUI, I should have probably died. I totaled the car. The only thing that wasn't really damaged was the driver's seat, you know, and all that I had was second-degree burns up the arm because of the airbag. So when you crash, you pass out, and the chemicals from the airbag get on your arm. And so even that didn't stop me, you know. That was, like, right in the thick of my disease. Like, I just was still – and that's what's crazy, too, you know. Like, I just had a cousin who just OD'd, you know, and just ended up in the hospital, and all the family around him are like, oh, this is it, you know, like it got bad, you know, now things are different. I'm like, no, like, it doesn't matter what you think about the situation. It's what he thinks. It's what's going on with him. Like, if he's not broken, like, it doesn't matter. Like, he could almost die over and over again, because that's what I did. And they don't, you know, normies don't get that, but I get that. And so for me, I just made it worse. Another part of my story was that I got introduced to AA at that point. They gave me a court card. When I had my first DUI, I only had to do 90 meetings, which wasn't a big deal. I don't remember anything from those 90 meetings. Like, I remember vaguely. This is pretty funny. Okay, I'll share this. I remember the first time, like, I actually had a memory, like, from that time. I don't know why, when I was in a meeting. This is how oblivious I was to AA or what it was that I thought that it was such a small thing. Like, there was only, like a few meetings, like, around the country. Like, I was like, oh, there's AA in this area, so I guess I'll go to it, and they make me sign a card. So I'm there. And there's this guy, and he probably had some time because he had that glow to him a little bit. And his name was Bill. And I don't remember. This was like a while ago. So his name was Bill, right? And he just shares, you know. And I was like, oh, he sounds really good, you know. And he looked at me, and he was like, and he like made contact with me. He's like, you know, have you ever looked at a bottle on the table and everyone stops drinking? And you go, no way that can happen. I have to drink that. And I go, shit, dude, that's me, yeah. And he goes, you know, you're not alone. And he looked at me, and I'm like, wow. And it's a As Bill Sees It meeting, right? So we all have the, as you can see where this is going. And I go, wow, he's the author of this, and the book that we're reading. I'm like, dude, like, and they're like, and then someone's like, yeah, I just want to thank, you know, like, you know, I see like pictures on the wall, and I'm like, dude, I'm like, that must be like, I don't know, is this Bill? Like, that's crazy that he's in the meeting. And that's how stupid I was about it. I was just like, wow, man, I think he's like an important guy here, you know, and he talked to me. Anyways, I don't remember hearing any recovery, which is hilarious. Like, I remember it just being a blur to me, and just thinking to myself, like, I don't relate to any of this, you know, I might have a drinking problem. And then things spiraled out of control after my second, not my second DUI. A friend of mine, we all were at we always did this. Towards the end, it was less parties, and it was more of us all hanging out together, and only the guys who were doing the hard stuff now. Now it's no longer the, you know, the parties, you know. No one wants to party with us because we're the ones, like, you don't want to be around, right? We're all skinny and shit, and you know what we're up to. And so we're drinking, and we're doing what we're doing, and just a normal night. But my friend doesn't wake up next to me. He falls asleep next to me, And I drive to my parents' home. I get a call in the morning, and my friend is he's freaking out, and my friend didn't wake up, and it was at our place. I mean, I lived with my parents, but everyone knew that I was part of that group, and it was a big thing in the community for him to pass away. He's a very loved guy in the community, and so it rocked everyone, you know. And it caused more shame and guilt than it did anything else. We didn't slow down. If anything, we got worse. And so for me, that's when things really got really picked up. It got to the point where I started using so much and drinking so much that suicide attempts ended up being the result of blackouts. And coming out of blackouts and realizing that I had tried to kill myself, which is a really gnarly thing to experience when you don't know when you take your next drink if you're going to wake up. And the thing to me was, this is bizarre, is that I had such a loose feeling about death at that time. I was like, sure, you take me, no big deal. Like, whatever, who gives a shit? Like, that's fine. If I go, that's fine. I didn't know I was terrorizing my family. I did not know that. Like, it was like a blind spot for me. I'll never forget that one of the times that I had done this, I had drank all morning. It was like all day. I had the day before I drank two, and I was just in a stupor. And I left the car on in the garage with the windows down, and I slept. And I just was like, this is it. And I remember kind of coming out of it a little bit, but I pounded the rest of the bottle, and I slept. And I think I spent most of the night in there, and I left. I lived alone at this point with a girlfriend who had left me. Wonder why? And she, yeah. So no one was at the home. If no one came looking for me, that definitely would have been it. You know, my dad, for some reason, decided to check on me that night. I have no idea why, and he doesn't know either to this day. You know, I like to think that it's my my God looking out for me when I wasn't. Like, he just, like, you know, he allowed me to continue punishing myself and like torture myself, but he just kept me alive, you know, because that was crazy to me that I had he'd come in, you know, around 3 a.m. and stopped it, and you know, and I realized at that point I had really had a problem, and I was gonna die soon if I didn't do something. So I had the great idea that well, you know, I can't get sober in Santa Maria because recovery is not that good there. So like, if I really want to be serious about this, I'm going to go to one of the cities, you know, like, or a city, because they probably have serious AA. And that's really what I was thinking. I was like, yeah, these old timers don't like me, you know, like, I don't know why. I keep going back out and I keep sharing, and like, no one really loves me, or like, you know, like, yeah, poor me. And, I moved to San Francisco with my girlfriend at the time. She was, yeah, actually, we weren't dating, huh? She was, no. I moved up there, and I really was serious about, the whole agreement was that I'm going to be sober, and I'm going to go there, and I'm going to go to AA, and I'm going to do this. I'm going to really do this because I think I can do it. And so I get there. And that's when I really know that I'm not just like kind of an alcoholic. Like, I'm the real type of alcoholic who needs all of this. Like, I'm not just like the meeting, go to a meeting once a week, like twice a week, three times a week, like hang out a little bit, talk, you know. And so this is where my story becomes more about recovery, because I think it's important to share that for me, I tried everything that didn't work in Alcoholics Anonymous. I am the guy who was serious about doing this. I was like, I'm serious. I'm going to do this. So I was like, but I'll try this part. Just give me this part of it. Okay, the rest of it, that's a lot. Just I'll do the meeting thing. Like, I'll do that. And then I would, like, last for 2 weeks, 3 weeks, you know, a month, at, you know, 3 months. And I do something, and then I go back out. And every time I went back out, it was horrible. And it became very suicidal and serious, because I hated myself for not being able to pull it together for my family. who knew that I was there to stay sober, and she would end up having to call the family every time I'd go missing. And so I would try different parts of the triangle. I didn't know at the time, you know. It was like I was mixing and matching, you know. So it was my program. It was the way I was doing it. And you would tell me, like, I had guys, like, really good guys in recovery pull me aside and be like, "Why you're not staying sober, right?" And I'd be like, "Oh, yeah, you know what? I don't have a sponsor. Yeah, you're right, I don't have a sponsor. It's like, "No, you're not doing all of it, man. You just do parts. I see you come in and out. I know what you're doing." It just was like, and it still just, it didn't matter what people said. I still had to try it out. I'm like that kind of guy. I'm stubborn. Like, I'm just going to try every way that's easier than what you're telling me before I have to do all of what you guys are doing. Because that seems like a whole lifestyle thing. And it is. Like, it's like, you know, I thought that it was just like a thing we did. Like, you know, like, no, it's like your life becomes recovery. I didn't know that. And so what I did was, and this is pretty funny, is I got a sponsor, and I liked him because he was a young guy like me. He was like maybe a few years older than me, and I was like 22 at the time or something like that, and he was like 25, and he was serious about recovery. I was like, "That's cool." He never really shared. He always read out of the big book. When he shared, he'd like relate it to the big book, and I'd be like, "Oh man, like, that's pretty cool, you know?" And I was like, "All right, you sponsor me." His name was Nyan. And he was like kind of like a hipster dude. And I liked it too because he was like very chill and laid back. So I thought, you know, maybe I could get away with some stuff too, you know? And what I started doing was I started meeting with him and working with him. And what he was doing the whole time, and I didn't realize it till now, until recently, that he was leading by example. He was an active member of Alcoholics Anonymous, kind of like what our speaker said last week, Darren. What an awesome message for me to hear. Is the best thing you could hope for in Alcoholics Anonymous is to be an active member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and that's what he was. And he was a good example of it. He had service commitments. He worked with new guys. He was honest in his shares, but not only that, he was working the steps, and then he was just doing the whole deal. You know, you could just see that. And his friends were all doing the deal with him because he surrounded himself with the winners. About that, I'll circle back to that. But he was doing all of that, and I thought to myself, this is the newcomer looking from the outside in of that life, what it looks like. And you go, "Oh, like, those are just cool guys. Like, I'm not like that. Like, they're all cool, you know, and they all talk recovery together, and they hang out, and they get pie after meetings, and they, you know." And I was like, and I'm over there, and I wonder why I'm on the outside looking in, because I don't know the language of recovery. I don't know how to talk that, because I'm not doing it. So they're all talking. They're talking about going conventions. They're talking about like working the steps. They're talking about resentments. They're talking shit about things a little bit, but it's cool. Like, you know, and it's all cool. And I'm just like, "Oh God, it's way too cool for me. Like, I'm not like that, you know?" So I'm there, I'm the newcomer, and I keep getting invited to things, right? And it's kind of cool because it kind of worked. It really did work. I would get invited to like cool diners in San Francisco, and we'd all go. It'd be like 10 o'clock on a Friday night, because that's when newcomer meet, or not, there were young person meetings. And everyone would go out, and they'd have a good time. And they'd all be talking the talk, you know? They'd all be talking about what's going on, what you're doing. And they go, "Yeah, man, how much time you got, man? Like, I see you a lot." And I'm all, "Oh, yeah, it's my first week again, you know? Like, I just went, you know, I went back out." I'm like, yeah, you kind of do that. "Well, how many times have you, you know, you've been going out, really?" And I'm like, yeah, you know, I keep getting like 2 weeks or 1 week at a time. And they go, "Oh, so you're just drinking." you know, like, "You're not really doing anything." I'm like, "No." And it hurt. Like, it really hurt. I was like, "Oh, like, I need this right now. Like, I need you guys to be on my side." Like, this is, you know, and, I was just like hurting. Like, I was barely holding on to a job, and I was like, "I need this to be like a thing for me." And like, they wouldn't, it's not that they were like excluding me. They just, like, they weren't interested in me. it's kind of boring to talk to a new guy who just keeps doing the same shit. Like, you can't get past a certain thing. You know, you're like, oh yeah, you did that again? Yeah, right on. All right. You know, it's just like, you just carry on. So people just let, you know, and I got left behind a lot. So I didn't like that. And so I kept asking guys what I had to do. And I would do a little bit more every time I went back out, because it would be devastating. It'd be embarrassing. It would suck. People stopped believing me when I said things because I just kept doing it over and over again. I'd lose jobs. I couldn't keep a job. It was like every time I went back out, I went on a bender. It was like MIA. I'm the kind of guy that when I start drinking and I go back out, you don't hear from me and no one hears from me. And I will hang out with a crowd that'll help me disappear, because I love that. I love disappearing. I love like disappearing from my life. So, you know, I'll say this. I started getting better at it though. Then I started going, okay, I kept coming back. So I kept coming back, even though it was embarrassing. I kept identifying as a new guy and I kept doing more work. And sure enough, I started working the steps and I started getting a little bit of that healing that goes on the inside. So I started staying around a little longer. I remember I got to like 6 months and I was like, wow, you know, like this is actually working. Like maybe it's working, you know, like I'm actually doing this. I started having commitments. I started doing what I could do. You know, I was actually doing it. But then here's the thing, I'd rest on my laurels. And I just think this is just part of my process. I no longer think I was an idiot. I used to call myself a jackass all the time. No, I just wasn't ready. Like I had to do what I had to do. This is the process that I went through in my recovery. Which is why I'm not judgmental when I see new guys do it over and over again, because that's me. I could still be that guy. I really could. So what I continued doing was I kept going back out. I get 6 months now, and I was starting to get 6 months to 7 months, and it was like, oh, I'm kind of doing good. So I don't need to do as much now, because my life's starting to get good, and I got a good job now. So you can back off. I don't have to do all the. I don't have to meet you every week. You know, I can meet you like once a month now. Let's just taper off a little bit. You know, and so I did that, and then I'll share this story because it's insidious, our disease. And there's a story in the big book that talks about the guy who stops by to get a sandwich, right? And he goes, this, the thought comes up like, maybe I'll have whiskey in my milk, right? And then it works and you're like, oh yeah, you know what? Maybe I'll have two whiskeys, you know? And this is my story. I started feeling weird because that's how alcoholism works for me. I don't really, it's like the air conditioning on in the background. Like you don't even know it's there until it's turned off and you go, oh shit, that was there the whole time. Like that's my alcoholism. Is I don't even know it's there. I start starts creeping, and then I'm irritable. I'm restless. I'm discontent. I don't really like my life. I think everything's wrong. I don't have the right girlfriend. I don't have the right job, and I don't live in the right area. Oh shit! This is not where I should be. And it gets, you know, and it's in the background somewhere. It's not like a constant theme, but it's there. And I this is how it worked for me. I was had like 7 months. I was like, I'm doing good. Everyone thinks I'm doing good. I get home from work, or I leave work one day, and I miss the bus because I don't have a car at this point. And I miss the bus to get back to my home in San Francisco. It takes me like an hour to get back to where I'm at. And so I missed that bus for some reason. It didn't come that day. So I go, you know what? I'm going to take the connector. You know, there's another one over here. There's another Muni over here. So I have to walk, though. And I take the scenic route. I was like, yeah, I'm going to enjoy. And I didn't know, this is probably my disease the whole time working on me. But it just felt like a normal walk. And it's a little cold out. It's nighttime. And there's a little city life going on. It's North Beach in San Francisco. So there's a little scene going on. And I think to myself, nothing's wrong. I'm not thinking about drinking. Like, it's not in my head to drink or anything like that. Right? You're just on a walk. I'm just hanging out. I'm a cool dude, you know, just going on a walk. And I'm walking. And then I go, oh, it's pretty cold. Like, it's pretty cold out here. Maybe I should just go in one of these places to, like, warm up. Yeah, that's pretty. And I'm just going to go in. I didn't even think twice about it. I'm just going to go into one of these places. That place looks cool. And I walk in, and I stand there. I stand on the wall and go, oh, yeah, there you go. And then the bartender's looking at me. It's not busy. And I go, well, that's kind of weird that I'm just standing here. Like, maybe I should go out, at least not be weird and just like sit at the bar. So I sit at the bar It's funny now, but it wasn't. I sit at the bar, and all I do is I go, I think to myself, because he doesn't like immediately come up to me. So in my head, I go, I'm just going to order a Coke. Just a Coke. Just hang out. And out of my mouth, when he comes up to me, he goes, what are you going to have? I'm like, a rum and Coke. I go, he goes, right on. And I go, where'd that come from? And so I drink it, you know, and I don't even think twice about it. You know, it says that in the big book that we don't even remember the month before, the week before. I don't even think about it. I just go, I don't even think that I'm living in this city, running away from my hometown because of this problem. But I'm going to do it anyways. Like, whatever. It's a trivial reason, right? Like, it's so stupid. And I drink it. And then I drink another one. And I drink another. And then I think I hang out in the bar for a while. And I get hammered. And I leave that bar and I go to another bar. I think I like try to do some things with like, you know, and I'm trying to like hook up with people or whatever. And thank God she's not in here right now. just kidding.
It's on recording.
Yeah, oh, it's recorded. So I didn't do anything that night. So this is funny. Yeah. So I get blacked. I'm drunk. I'm just hammer drunk again. I talk to I'm talking to a bum on the street about basketball for some reason. I kind of remember that. We're talking about Larry Bird and how Larry Bird's underrated. I don't know why. And this is the funny part is that I'm walking in the middle of San Francisco, like there's no way anyone could find me. And I'm like, and I think, and for some reason I remember like walking in the street, like cars are like beeping at me because I'm like, oh, and I'm like wanting someone to hit me, I think, and like I'm just like whatever. And Katie pulls up and she's just like, she's like, get in the car. And I go, oh. And I'm mad. I'm like, how'd you find me? And I find out later that while I'm sleeping, on my last relapse, they put an app on my phone to track. It's a family tracker thing. Like, you know. So I'm being tracked like an animal. They find me. I'm just so pissed. I'm like, now I can't get away. Because, like, if I want a phone, like, they're going to find me every time. Oh, man. And so that was bad. And then I did it again. You know, I came back and I worked this program in a slightly better way. And for me, I ended up, you know, yeah, it does fly by. So I ended up getting, I told my friend Johnny who allowed me one more time. I met up with him and I got a little more time again, 3 months. And he wants me to share this one. I sat him down like a good friend. And I said, hey, I just want you to know Alcoholics Anonymous isn't for me. And that I'm going to do the best I can though because I'm good now. And I'm going to be okay. And he goes, and he tells me, and this was at dinner, and he goes, please just don't die. That's all he said, just please don't die. And it took me a month to end up almost dying, right? And I almost died. And thank God, you know, I somebody found me. But I ended up sleeping on his couch for 2 weeks when no one else would take me in because Katie at this point was done. My family was done. And so I start couch surfing, and I think that, you know, my coworkers don't want me to stay with him either. And he lets me sleep on his couch for maybe a few weeks. And I move back to my hometown. And now this is just like, I'm so devastated at this point, and I just don't know what else to do. It's like I'm a failure, and I can't stop drinking. I can't stop using. And my family's kind of given up on me. They're going to, you know, allow me to stay at their house. But the next time I drink, I'm done. And so I go to meetings here, and I really give this a shot. I'm really desperate at this point. And I had a gift of desperation. And I worked I worked as hard as I could. It wasn't that I just worked hard, because I don't think it's hard work what we do here, but it's consistent work. It's every day. It's wake up, and by default, I'm messed up, and I have to do work to get out of it. I got to work, and I did that, and I did all of the whole deal that we talk about. I had a good sponsor when I came back. I got busy, and I worked the steps. I had commitment meetings. Remember I told you, I've tried everything that doesn't work, so I do know what doesn't work. So I know that I have to do all of it. So I'm afraid at this point. I'm really afraid to try just pieces of it. I want the whole thing, because I want the guaranteed version. I want the version you guys talk about. I've heard the analogy of like baking a cake. If you don't follow the recipe, you're not going to get a cake. And don't come to me asking, why isn't my cake taste good, and you didn't follow the recipe. So that's, I was like, okay, what do I have to do? And I was dead serious about my recovery. And it brings me to this last period before I had my new sobriety date. I worked this thing, you know, and what happened was for me, and this is another part of my story, is that it became more important to me that you seeing me work a good program than it did for me to be working behind the scenes doing the work that we do. That became more important to me than actually having a real connection with my higher power, than actually doing the prayers and meditation, than actually reading. All that stuff became less important, more important who I was becoming in Alcoholics Anonymous. And if I start thinking I'm someone special in AA, I'm in trouble. And that's what happened to me. Because I'm not special, you know? I'm just another active member of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's what it is. And it took me a hard lesson to learn that. And so I ended up taking, I told you about, I didn't feel like I deserved my year. That's what it came down to. I felt like I didn't deserve the year. I self-sabotaged. And I came back again, and I identified as a newcomer at the Lion's Den, which was at the time my my home group. And it was birthday night. Hey, I don't know if someone, yeah, you remember, Jerry?
Yeah.
I cussed out the meeting. Yeah. I was pissed. I was really pissed that I couldn't enjoy, I couldn't get that. I was so frustrated that I had to do it one more time. I had to do the newcomer thing one more time. What happened to Jesse? Jesse was on fire. He was doing all of it. He's the new guy again. That was, you know, and I thank Dank so much. It's my favorite thing is that I came back to the meeting, and everyone comes up to me, and I'm the newcomer, and I hate that shit. Everyone comes up to me and goes, oh yeah, you know, humility is key though. That's the, yeah. I look at that and I go, fuck, all right, I'll look at that. I was just so mad, and I wanted to like, and I love everyone who did come up to me and say something. I really do. At the time though, I was just really pissed off, and I was very frustrated about it. And Dink came up to me and said, F him. Yeah. That's not how you said it, but said F him. And he goes, so what? Do it again. So what? And I got in the meeting, and I hung on to that for dear life, because I went home again, and the voices were on in my head, and I almost went back out again. I picked up a bottle the next day, held it in my hand, because I thought, if I'm going to change my recovery date, my sobriety date, then I might as well enjoy it and actually get drunk. Like, not this little wimpy three pill thing I did. And so I was all, I'm going to do this. And Randy called me right before I started drinking. I'm forever grateful for that. He talks to me on the phone. My sponsor, who usually works in Monterey, happens to that day not be at work, but be at Costco for some reason, which is literally 5 minutes from my house, from my place. He gets the call from Katie, I believe, and he's there like quickly. I hear someone coming up the stairs, heavy boots, and I go, that's not Katie. And he comes in and he goes, hey buddy. I go, hey, mind if I take that from you? yeah, go ahead. Yeah. He took it from me, and that's my sobriety date. I never lost that sobriety date because of that experience, and I didn't have to go through another experience. Nate took me to my first meeting, kicking and screaming, talking shit about all of this at this meeting. I was like, God, man, I identified as a newcomer doing the whole thing. And he's all, just shut up. Just get. And so this time around, what it is for me is that it's not about what it looks like on the outside to you guys. I carry the message because that's what we do. But what's primary to me is what's going on behind the scenes that you guys don't, what you guys don't see. What is my prayer life like? What do I really read the big book every day? Do I read page 86, 87, 88? You know, do I read the daily reflections? And I have brothers in recovery who are a tight-knit group that we all text each other and remind each other to do those things. I don't think we've missed a morning. There's maybe been a few I can think of, but we don't miss mornings texting each other, talking about the literature. That's just the way we do it now, because I think it's because we're scared. We're scared of the alternative. We don't want to go back. Like, our stories are so similar. Like, we've all tried it, how it doesn't work, you know? So we're just like, just give me an extra dose, like, just heap it on, and hopefully. But what the thing is that to a newcomer or someone newer than me, to think to yourself, oh my God, that does sound like a lot, you know, to do all the work. But what I wish I could tell myself when I was back then, about 6 years ago or so, when I was trying all of this, was that the more work I do, though, the better it gets. Like, the results come in, they come rolling in. You get the family back, you know, and you get the seat back in your family. I made the amends, you know. But not only that, I'm still an addict. I like feeling good, so I treat Alcoholics Anonymous like I do, like I used to do with drugs and alcohol. Give me, you know, I need a fix. I need to go to a meeting. I still behave that way about Alcoholics Anonymous. It's just that I use the tools that we use here, the spiritual tools that I picked up, you know. I don't like feeling bad. So I don't like having the resentments. I don't like feeling like crap. I don't like feeling that. I don't like feeling pissed off. I don't like feeling comfortable in my own skin. I still do that a lot in recovery. I still feel the weird, oh, something's not right, don't look at me, you know. And when that happens, I'm all, fuck this. I know what to do. Like, let's go. And I get honest and I start getting back to work because I don't want to feel that way. I don't want to live my life like that. I didn't get sober just to, like, you know, just to, like, kind of feel okay. Like, I want to feel okay, you know. And I love how I'm using Darren's pitch, man, but it's so spot on. It's like a message that is just so strong, is that I do all of this work not to be like some extraordinary, like, stud, like, at work or something, or like some guy who's just crushing it. I do all of this stuff. Like, I go to meetings, I have commitment meetings, I meet with my sponsor once a week, I meet with my sponsees once a week, I pray and meditate, you know, and I do all this, not just to be up here, but just to be here, just to be a normal dude in society, so that, and he said it like this, he said, just so that when someone asks how Jesse is at work, you know, and he goes, he's all right, yeah, he's all right. Like, that's the best that happens when I do all of this stuff. I'm just a dude that you don't think anything's weird about me. and that's, dude, that means a lot to me. It does. Seriously. Because I'm a weirdo. Like, I usually trip people out, you know. I say too much, or I'm already doing it. But for what it is like for me today, is that I really do, man, I can't even say, I feel like I just found the recipe, you know, and it doesn't feel like I've arrived. It feels like I just found it, and now I've started the race. I've started the marathon now. I'd never had it right before. I was always, never had the recipe. I had the recipe today, and so my life is like, in recovery, is going to be like a marathon. I thank God I have a sponsor as he's been sober as long as I've been alive, because I trust that. I trust that it won't fall apart, right? Because I'm so used to all the good stuff happening right now, and like the family and the job, and like it's all great. But part of me is like, whoa, when's it going to happen? Like, when's it going to fall apart? Like, because that's what I'm used to. Like, it's what I do. And so for me, it's like, okay, now that I'm doing this and I know what works for me, I found my critical mass. This is Johnny's little thing. I found that whatever it takes for me. And I basically just feel like I have to start. You know, now I've started. Now I can actually continue doing this, and I have to continue growing because I can't just get stagnant to an Alcoholics Anonymous. I know that there's another plateaus that you hit, you know, and every time I start feeling good, I start going, oh yeah, this is nice. I like this plateau. This is pretty cool. I'm pretty normal at work, you know. It's like God goes, boom, I want you to hit another plateau. I'm going to give you a kid. Yeah. I'm going to give you a kiss. See how you do that. See. I'm like, I just started doing good in the other stuff. Like, I can't do the father thing, man. That's a lot. But I'm doing good, I think. Am I doing okay?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. All right. and just about the whole, you know, I hear this message, you know, they say stick with the winners. And I didn't go that route. You know what I mean? Like, I really didn't, you know. I chose to hang out with guys like Nate, you know, and just and Matt, you know, and Zach, you know, and Colin, and like these are my people, you know. It's like, that was my one premeditated joke. That was my one. That was it. Anyways, man, am I pretty close? Is that close? Is that close enough? Okay, cool. Anyways. Anyways, man, I'm just super stoked to even do this, man, to be able to share up here and to be honest and actually talk recovery and not feel full of shit. That's nice, you know. That just feels nice. And I just love this, man. I was like, this is my family in here. I look around the room and I've had serious relationships I've built in Alcoholics Anonymous that you guys have seen me at, like, you know, at my worst. And for me to be here today and just to be active, you know, in your guys' life, it's just like, this is so cool, you know? It's like, I got a kid and, like, he's going to get raised in Alcoholics Anonymous. Like, how cool is that? That's just, I'm just so excited for it, you know? Anyways, guys, I love you, and that's it. It's a wrap, right? All right.
Let's give Jesse another round, huh?